The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does.
Soul of Jefferson.
Good morning, everybody. Terry Raposa and
Janet Chancellor
and
Lynn Carpenter. Good morning, everybody.
And we are here with Jefferson State of Mind, broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. And remember, 96.5 FM is where the music always does sound better. We're your talk radio. We're streaming live on KCNR1460.com. KCNR1460.com. And if you have a question or a comment.
We don't want to hear it.
Unless it agrees with us, and then we'll listen.
Wynn had less sleep than all of us. So he worked really hard at a fundraiser. We'll get into that in a minute. But you also can call in at 530-605-4567. 530-605-4567. Mm-hmm. So we had a fundraiser last night.
We did. It was a very good fundraiser.
How did we do, all right?
Yeah, we did okay. Yeah.
Good.
And so we're going to be able to continue doing what we do on our podcasts and pay the bills and do all that stuff. It was great to see all the Patriots that were there last night, people coming to support and, you know, be part of the group again. It's been a minute since we had a fundraiser, so all the same old faces were back out there, some new faces. It was really good.
A lot of new faces.
Yeah. A lot of good faces.
A lot of new faces.
We had faces all over the place.
Wasn't there, Dave?
And for me, the highlight of the dinner was the broccoli salad. That was delicious.
Yeah, everybody was saying that, you know, that was really the hit. But it was great. John Knight cooked all the food. And thank you, John Knight.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, that kid is just special.
He's awesome.
An amazing young man. And Leslie Sawyer did such a great job. Oh, my gosh, that girl did the work of 10 women.
Yeah, she did a great job.
And 10 men.
Yes.
So
but that's the easy part, doing the work of 10 men.
You know, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, any two women could do that.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Well, a little something there for women's liberation from Janet Chandler.
Liberation.
Yeah.
Yes. But it was a very, very good event. And also, Andrew from Bernie, if you're listening, Andrew from Bernie. I got your phone message, but that is not my cell phone, and you texted my landline, so I'm not going to get it. I got your message on the way out the door, so if you want to call in, you know the number. Anyway, this morning, there's a lot of things going on, not only in the nation, in the state, in the city. There's a lawsuit going on against our ROV officer. That is...
Who'd have thunk it?
Well, you know, but...
Do we have one?
No.
An ROV officer?
I love it.
I was not aware that there was someone in that position actually performing.
On paper, apparently.
Yeah.
Well put. Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, I think that, Mr. Ladd has done a pretty nice job of what he's done there. Mm-hmm. We'll have him on soon for an interview. If you want to hear about that, you can go to Sovereign Minds on Mountaintop Media Podcast, Sovereign Minds. You can also find them on Rumble. They did a good interview. And John Knight also, I think it's on Patriot State of Mind, but I'm not sure if it's that or a special report. But he also apparently did a good interview. So a lot of good stuff. One of the things that we were going to talk about this morning, we have this issue in California where we believe that the only way to fix it is a state split. I mean, I just don't see any other way. Nobody has explained any other way. It was evident last night in this fundraiser with hundreds of people that everyone felt that California has got to be divided up. I can't imagine any other position other than dividing it into the four states that we suggested.
There's no other option that makes sense. Truly, it doesn't. There's no other option that makes sense that's been presented by anyone to date. Correct?
That's yes. The economist Thomas Sowell made the statement that there are no solutions. There are just trade-offs, and our so-called solution for fixing California is indeed a trade-off. We are going to give up certain things in order to get other things.
Right.
And we have looked at the trade-off, and we've decided that a separate state, or in our case now four states, is the way to solve our problem with our trade-off.
Yeah, and with that, we do have Mark Baird on the phone. How are you, Mark?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. So we were just talking, I don't know if you caught it or not, but we were talking about the only solution is a state split for California. So what's a user?
Well, that's true, and I think we need to preface that with a few things, though. First of all, the fix has been in California for a long time, and this has been going on for, well, I don't know, 1960, so it's almost 70 years the fix has been in California. And it's going to be very difficult, very time-consuming, and very expensive to unfix it. And I think we can do it, but I want to explain that it's going to take an immense amount of effort to do this. And it's probably the only way it can be done, because the fix is in here. The Democrat majority has been working on this since the 1960s under Chief Justice Earl Warren and Governor Warren before that and Attorney General Warren even before that. So this is a plan that's been in progress for a very, very, very long time. And one of the players is CalPERS, and one of the players is California Teachers Association and California Nurses Association and the Service Employees International Union, and all of these guys are players in the fix. But this started in the 60s with the three cases, Gray versus, I can't remember the name of it now, Gray versus Sanders, Reynolds versus Sims, and Baker versus Carr. And the Carr case was the first one, and this is really important for people to understand because the federal government operates in a certain way. Articles 1, 2, and 3 outline how that method works. And under Article 1, states have two representatives each in the United States Senate, and that's very important to remember. It doesn't matter how big the state is, and it doesn't matter how little the state is. They have two representatives in the United States Senate. And that was done intentionally. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. That was done intentionally so that little states would have some say on the political stage that was equal to big states, and it didn't matter how many people were in those states because the geography itself deserved representation. Now, there were states that also had that model of government, and California was one of them. In 1926, they passed Proposition 28, which detailed. And we sort of had that same model before then, but this codified it, that no county would have less than one senator, and that no senator would represent more than three counties. That's how it worked, and those counties had to be contiguous. And that was intended so that counties like Alpine and Mono at the time, and probably Siskiyou County at the time, who had very few residents wouldn't, in other words, if you only have 200 people living there, a state senator from a neighboring county was fully capable of riding over and seeing what you needed and then going down to Benicia or Sacramento, wherever the capital was at the time, and speaking out on your behalf. So we had that model of government all the way up until the 1960s. And then the Baker versus Carr opinion came out, and that was probably one of the worst things that the federal government or the federal judiciary has ever done. Because what they did was they declared that they had the power to intervene in state elections. And they did it by
meaning the courts? They meaning the courts could intervene?
they, meaning the federal courts, declared
okay.
that they had the
Go ahead.
That they had the power, the constitutional power, right. to intervene in state elections. That
okay.
had never been done before.
Okay.
States control their elections. That's in the Constitution.
Right. Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden the federal judiciary declares they have the power over state elections. And here's why they did it. Because I believe it was an Alabama case or Tennessee. I can't remember. I just read the case the other day, but I can't remember what state it was in. But anyway, what happened was they used to have a system called county block voting. And I don't agree with county block voting, but it was a fact of life in those states, and it was up to the state to change that if people didn't like it. However, what would happen is when the people of the county voted on some statewide measure or thing, depending upon what state you're in, what you call it, if the majority of, let's say, the county was in the affirmative on this election goal, then that county would receive one unit, they called it. And that was called county block voting. So if the majority in one county said yes, they got a unit. If the majority in another county said yes, they got a unit. And if they said no, then there was a unit assigned to the no vote. And then they would just add up the units to decide whether this thing passed or not. Well, what the federal court said was that gave less populous counties an oversized value to their vote.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say your county has 40,000 like ours does.
Mm-hmm.
And Los Angeles County has 4 million at the time, then their vote would be, our vote would be worth, according to the court, say 1,000 times more than a vote in Los Angeles County, because the result would be the block would be one for us and one for them. Well, that may have been a flawed approach to a solution, but it still was their approach. And it was up to the state itself to decide whether they had a tyrannical approach to state votes or not. But the federal court said, no, that's wrong. That's not going to stand. Each vote has to have the same weight. And so, you know, you'll vote, you'll count the votes in the counties, and then you'll count the votes in the other counties and so on and so forth. And the total of those votes will be the success or failure of whatever the measure was. So that was Baker versus Carr. And then the next one was, Gray versus Sanders. And Gray versus Sanders was another Earl Warren case. And, you know, these things are funny because the worst cases were, Earl Warren. And so then, Gray versus Sanders was also a county block type case, but it had a different effect that it was starting to build the what do we call this concept? The one man, one vote concept
right.
is what Earl Warren called it.
Right.
And one man, one vote is a misnomer. It's never been true. It's not true now. It wasn't true then because every man got a vote. It was the way they tallied the votes that was different. But there wasn't a case where in a county a man didn't get a vote and someone else didn't get a vote. It was simply that when they counted up the yeas and the nays, the county itself was assigned a unit based upon those votes, or not assigned a unit, or however that worked. And so these two cases really solidified this one man, one vote thing. And then you get to Reynolds versus Sims, and that was a case where, because after the Westbury or Gray versus Sanders, the case was had two different names in its history. Earl Warren was he was happy as a clam. He said, "Okay, now so no state will ever challenge the federal government again because they know we have the power to intervene in their elections." And something like 30 court challenges later, Earl Warren decided to put a nail in the box. And that was the Reynolds versus Sims case. And in the Reynolds versus Sims case, the United States Supreme Court under Chief Justice Earl Warren said that all elections, all state elections, must be equally district by population. In other words, all state houses, the representatives to the state, each one of those has to have a roughly equal number of people in it, and there is a formula. I think it can vary 10%.
Isn't that like a unicameral government, though?
Well, wait, I'll get to that part. I mean, yeah, this is the least of it. The result of it was what killed the United States of America in general, in California specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a situation where the federal government demands that in a bicameral state, which we are, that the assembly, each assembly district has to have roughly the same population as all the other assembly districts, and then you have a state senate where each senatorial district has to have roughly the same number of people as every other senatorial district, now you have completed the, quote, one man, one vote theory in contravention and direct contradiction to the United States Constitution, because that's not how the bicameral House works in the United States, and it's not how it worked in California, and it was totally legitimate how it worked. But now you have a state where one house is simply a rubber stamp for the other.
Right.
Because they represent the same number of people, their voters are the same, but the worst of it is what Judge Frankenfurter, kind of an odd name, but that was the guy's name, he said, if we do this, we will create a nation that has an entirely, and these are his words, city point of view.
Right.
Urban. Because you have a situation in California where the city and county of Los Angeles has, I don't know what, 10 or 11 million people. And then you have the northern third of the territory of the state of California, one third of the land mass of our state, has only 1.2 million people. So who wins? I mean, just ask yourself, who's going to win every single argument that comes up between Southern California and Northern California? Well, that wasn't quite the end of the story, because as we go on, there was another case called Silver v. Reagan, and that was how, because we did have Prop 28, and we did have the single, state senate was represented by geography, basically, and the state assembly was represented by population. And that mirrored the federal government, which is how it worked. And in California, Article 11, Section 1, it does say that counties are legal subdivisions of the state, and therefore, in my opinion, they deserve unique representation because not only are they a legal subdivision of the state and therefore need representation in the state house, but also the geography in California is so varied that, you know, you have a forested resource county and then you have a desert county. Well, don't those two things kind of clash? I mean, one needs different stuff than the other one does. One needs a different outlook on that representation than the other one does. But we don't have that in California. So under the Silver v. Reagan case, the state was forced into the Reynolds v. Sims model. That was the end of Prop 28. They did a constitutional amendment, the Reagan v. Silver case hit, and what happened was 22 out of 40 state senators went to Southern California.
Right.
And 35 out of 80 at the time, and this was 1964, and mind you, the number is way worse now than it was then.
Yes.
And at the time, 35 assembly people were shifted to represent Southern California. So what it did was, the federal government redistricted California. That's what happened. And under Chief Justice Warren's model, it was redistricted in a way that it would always favor the urban areas. It would always favor densely populated areas. It would never favor rural resource counties. It would never favor small communities. So what they did was they codified into law and into the California Constitution, the tyranny of the majority. And I want to give you one just really quick example of that, and then you can start, and then we can start hashing this back and forth. We have an Indian gaming casino in Yreka. No one wanted that. We had Measure B in that was a countywide measure, and in that countywide measure, 87% of the people voted no to an Indian gaming casino in Yreka. We don't want it. We don't want the riffraff. We don't want that type of enterprise in our town. And 87% of the people very, very clearly said that at the ballot box. So what happened was the tribe in question went to a Los Angeles state senator and said, hey, why don't you put forward a state bill that authorizes an Indian gaming casino in Yreka? And the guy, and I'm sure he got paid, I don't know how much and I don't know how, but I'll bet you there was money involved in it.
You think?
And so he puts the bill out, and then everybody here, we heard about this through the back door because LA doesn't announce, the Los Angeles state senators don't announce what bills they're going to put forward to Siskiyou County. They don't care what we think. They don't care what we want, and they don't care what we know. They don't have to. They don't represent us. And so he puts this bill into the hopper. The Democrats, of course, pass it immediately because he's a Democrat. They're a Democrat. They have a tyranny of the majority. And then everyone starts writing letters to this guy and tries to call him. And they, and the first thing they ask you is, oh, well, where do you live? Well, I live in Siskiyou County. Oh, well, you need to call your own representative. That's, you know, Brian Daly or whoever it was at the time. And so we couldn't communicate with the guy. We couldn't rebuff him. We couldn't try to convince him not to do this because the people didn't want it. He didn't want to hear what we had to say because he does not represent us. And then in the speech he made to the California Senate, he stands up to the podium and he says, yeah, I've got this bill for an Indian gaming casino in Yreka, California, and nobody's against it. I haven't had one single person say they were against it. Well, who in Compton cares whether you have an Indian gaming casino in Yreka?
Oh, my God.
No, the answer is no one. So in his head, and, well, in his justification, which was criminal in my opinion, but whatever.
I agree.
It's water way under the bridge now. He says, no one in my district is against this. And the bill passes, 78-0 and or 78-2 or whatever, and maybe our own representative voted against it. I don't even remember, to tell you the truth. But so now we have this casino that no one wanted and no one voted for and no one was approved except the city of Los Angeles wanted it. When they introduced wolves into our county, into Siskiyou County, a lot of groups came to the fish and game meetings. They were from Los Angeles. And they came up here to support having wolves in our county. They didn't want them in their own county. They don't have them there. But they were sure in favor of having them in our county. And guess what? We got them. Because the majority of representation in the state of California lies from the northern Los Angeles County line to the Mexican border. It is the vast majority of representation resides there. And so Justice Frankenfurter was right. We have a nation now where 10 or 15 large cities, it is possible for them to pipe the tune that all elections will follow from the president down to the lowest elected official. We have a situation in California where a couple of cities run a state with the help of the state employees union because they know which side their bread's buttered on, and away we go. And we have things that result from that, like the water bond, $1 billion.
We're coming up on our break, Mark.
Okay.
Go ahead. If you go ahead and wrap this part up, and then we'll go to our break. Come back. Go ahead.
We had $8 billion charged to all the people of California to build water storage. It didn't build any, but it did tear out four dams in Siskiyou County because that was the bone they threw the environmentalists to allow the bill to pass.
Wow.
And that's where we live now.
Okay, well, with that, Mark is holding over through the break. Incredible stuff, incredible information, and a great explanation. And I would hope that people that are listening to this go back and listen to it again on the archive and share it. I mean, this is what happened. He went back in history, told us what happened to our state, explained it through the court cases. You're not going to get anything more factual than you just heard here, folks. So with that, we're going to go off for our break. We'll be back with Mark Baird, and time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
How about 52, 53, and 54?
There you go. Yeah.
I'll bet you never heard old Marshall Dillon say, Miss Kitty, have you ever thought of running? Settling down, would you marry me? If I ask you twice and beg you pretty please, she'd have said yes in a New York minute. They never tied a knot. God wasn't in it. He just stole a kiss as he rode away.
He never hung his hat up at Kitty's place. I should have been a cowboy. I should have learned to rope and ride. Wearing my six-shooter, riding my pony on a cattle drive. Seen any young girls' hearts just like Gene and Roy, singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Sellers. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
I never ask you where you're going. I've never asked you where you've been. I've never called and checked your story. You stayed out with all your friends. I've never tried to catch you lying. I didn't want to know the truth. I'd rather go on loving blind girls then go on loving without you. I wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. I wish I could start this whole thing over again. I'm not saying that you'd ever be true. I just don't want to know how it ends. You see that my heart in the palm of your hand. I'd still look like a fool in front of your friend.
Yes, sirree. Sally Lou, thank you, darling.
Isn't that a perfect commentary on the political situation in our country now?
Amen.
We have for too long ignored the truth.
Yep.
We didn't want to know, and now we better know.
We better know. That's the truth.
Yep.
Thank you, baby. Anyway, getting back to our guest, Mark Baird. So, Janet, do you have anything you want to weigh in on that Mark said?
Well, what I said at the beginning of the show, solutions, trade-offs. What are we willing to give up now in order to get what we want?
Well, that's a good one. Like I said, the fix is in, and it's pretty well entrenched, but we're not without hope, and that's why I'm calling, because there's always hope, and our hope is to escape the tyranny somehow. Now, so let's ask a couple of logical and easily answered questions. Can we escape the tyranny by appealing to the governor in California and appealing to the legislature to fix this and have a more representative government where people in smaller counties can actually have some hope for their lives or fix things in that way legislatively. What do you think?
No.
We tried that, remember? How many emails do we send, Mark?
We can't because the state can't fix it. Only the Supreme Court can fix it. They are the ones who messed it up, and they're the only ones who can come up with the solution.
I think
for one thing, it'd be like asking a bank robber not to rob the bank.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We just don't have any hope there. The legislature in Sacramento is so one-sided toward the cities and toward the woke god that they worship that I don't think there's any hope in that. I think our hope is in state split, as we've always said, and we've tried a couple of methods. We tried in court, but unfortunately for us, in the federal courts, the fix is in there, too. I mean, the Ninth Circuit and the California for the Eastern District and for most of the districts in California is so overweighted with Democratic operatives and woke operatives that they march to the tune of the party. They're not really judges. They're political hacks. And in my Second Amendment case, the Ninth Circuit panel pointed out to the judge that she was a political hack and that she needed to stop doing it. And she needed to follow the Constitution, whether she liked what was in it or not. And she needed to follow Supreme Court precedent, whether she liked it or not. And that judge ignored them. That judge in my Second Amendment case is the same judge that denied us a fair hearing in the CFR, the Citizens for Fair Representation case.
Didn't the court also tell us that it really wasn't their job, it was a legislative job at the beginning?
No, not exactly. I mean, yeah, in a de facto way she did.
Right.
But what she basically did was she did something for the first time in United States judicial history. She gave the correct ruling in that any voter dilution or lack of representation case must be heard by a three-judge panel, and that's in United States code. That's federal law. So she found that that her job and her only job, unless the case is frivolous or without merit, and she said in open court that it wasn't frivolous and it wasn't without merit. So that was the only bar we needed to cross. We did. And she assigned a three-judge panel, and then 3 days later, she reversed her own decision and dismiss the case for lack of standing.
Is that the only case that's ever been done like that?
Yes, it's the only case that I've ever found in the history of the United States that a federal judge reverses their own ruling and then dismisses the case.
That tells you everything you need to know right there.
Well, what I said at first, the fix is in.
Yes.
And the fix is certainly in California. Now, this judge, she just happens to be a neighbor of Jerry Brown and, well acquainted with the Newsom family and was a Sacramento City Councilwoman, gave up her seat to Daryl Steinberg so he could be the mayor of Sacramento. And the reward that Barry Soritoro gave her, he gave her a federal judgeship, and she is now the chief judge in California's Eastern District.
Thanks, Obama.
Any case you get is going to go across her desk, and she isn't a judge. She's a Democratic hack. So the fix is in.
Yeah.
But we do have some opportunity here in the legislative process in that we can file a statewide initiative, much like Tim Draper did in the three-state proposition that he had, and he qualified that for the ballot. He got enough signatures. And at that point, once he qualified it for the ballot, then there was an environmental group that came through, and they sued Tim Draper, and they had the case in front of the courts in California. And oddly enough, in this case was called Planning and Conservation League v. Padilla. Now, this is the interesting part about it. The plaintiffs were an environmental group. The defendants were Alex Padilla, at the time Attorney General for the state of California, and Tim Draper. So they were literally suing the state and Tim Draper for placing a ballot initiative on the ballot that would perhaps split the state into three parts. Okay?
Wasn't Padilla the Secretary of State?
No, he could have been.
That would make more sense than the Attorney General.
Yeah,
Secretary of State.
So he may have been.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Secretary of State.
Sarah was
yep.
the AG. So
but how does splitting a state negatively affect the environment?
Well, that was the issue that they proposed in the hearing, but that's not what the decision was based upon.
Okay.
So it doesn't affect the environment at all, not in any way, shape, or form. And most judges who were properly vetted and real judges, not Democratic hacks, would have dismissed the case for lack of standing. In other words, a proposed, not a fact, a fait accompli, but a proposed state split couldn't possibly affect the environment because nothing's been done yet. Now, had they sued after the initiative passed, they might have had standing, but they didn't. They sued before the initiative was even voted upon, and so they completely lacked standing. In other words, the fruit wasn't ripe yet. But this judge took the case because they're Democratic hacks, they're not judges, and then in record time, I mean, typically, do you know how long it takes to get a case through a circuit court into the Supreme Court? It takes years. I mean, that's what I've been doing with the Second Amendment case. I've been at this 7-8 years, and
Was this the California Supreme Court?
Yes.
Okay.
So it whipped through the court system in California,
right.
It got to the California Supreme Court.
Right.
And the California Supreme Court had the initiative after all the signatures were qualified. In other words, people wanted this. Enough people signed the petition and signed the initiative that it was qualified to go on the ballot, and no one argued about that. That wasn't the point of argument. It was qualified to be placed on the ballot and probably would have passed. So the Supreme Court had it removed from the ballot, and what they said was that it was too big a change to government and that it would alter the California Constitution so significantly that this couldn't be done. And you know what Draper and Padilla argued? It was probably Draper's attorney argued back. He said this had nothing to do with altering the California Constitution or amending it or changing it in any way, shape, or form. Our goal was to nullify the California Constitution and replace it with three other state constitutions, which I thought was a very plausible argument. In other words, they didn't intend to change the California Constitution.
They did not.
They intended to throw it out and get three new ones with three new states. But, of course, the Supreme Court found in favor of the Democrats in Sacramento because you can't milk a cow that you don't own anymore. You can't rob a state that doesn't exist. You can't get paid under the table. You can't fill the lockers of all of your Democratic buddies from the coffers of a state that is no more. And so the fix was in. The fix was in the courts. The fix was in legislatively. The fix was in with the voters. The fix was in, period. And Draper's initiative was removed from the ballot in such a way that I think, and this is a personal thought, that the state of California thinks that no one will try it again. But we have to try it again. We have tried the court process. We ran straight into the Democrat Party, who owns California, by the way. And if you don't think they own you, just take a look around. How much do you pay for gas? And how much is it in Oregon? And how much is it in Texas and Nevada and Arizona and all those other places? You pay your taxes. Oh, do you pay the highest tax in the nation? Oh, that's right, you do. Do you have the worst? Do you pay more for students in public schools but have the worst education system in the nation? Pretty close to it. I think we're number 48. Do you pay more for roads but have the worst roads? Well, where's that money going? I mean, where is all the money that we pour into this state out of our pockets? Where is it literally going? Because it is not going in the places they say it is. I mean, $8 billion for water storage. None was ever built. In fact, water storage was destroyed out of that. Well, look at where the money went. $25 million to the Pacific Ocean Conservancy, run by Mary Nichols, who was the chairman of California CARB,
right.
And she was the chairman of federal EPA, and now she runs some little charity. They give her $25 million. Well, what did Mary do with the money? Well, she did turn around and donate to Democratic political campaigns with it, but did she save the Pacific Ocean? Even a sliver of it with that $25 million? I never heard. Did you?
Maybe Doge will find out.
Yeah, you know, when we saw her,
the Mountain Conservancy got $20 million out of the water bond. Did they save the Santa Monica Mountain?
I think she might have spent it on clothes. I think she spent it on clothes. Here's why I think that. We were down in Sacramento at a CARB meeting when she was still with CARB, and she had a dress on. And if anybody's ever seen the Disney version of Alice in Wonderland, she was the Queen of Hearts. She actually, the thing actually ballooned on the bottom, and she looked kind of like a bowling pin with a dress on.
Yeah, kind of like a cartoon character, but that's what they are. But anyway, so that's the fix. That's what we're up against. But what we believe we can do is we can field another statewide initiative, and we can make this make sense. And now there are some issues with this that I'm sure we are not taking seriously enough. And I have thoughts about that, and we'll have to talk about those things. But I think in general, the program that we've outlined is pretty good, and it's legal, it's moral, it's ethical. I believe it's constitutional. It's certainly constitutional under the federal constitution. I've read the California constitution probably 10 times. I don't find anywhere in the California constitution where this would not be constitutional. However, one thing we do need to keep in mind, the Democratic hacks and the party of criminals and crooks and liars and thieves that run this state and that own you, and they do, you work for them. You may not realize it unless you've opened up this month's electrical bill. You work for them. They take all your money, and they allow you to keep the little piece that they think will keep you just alive enough to stay here. And that's what we're fighting, folks. And if we're not prepared to raise the money, because this is not going to be a cheap deal. To pass this initiative, it's probably going to cost, and when you factor in all the court stuff, because we are going to be challenged in court, and the cases that I'm going through right now, pretty sure thing we're going to be challenged in court. I think we're looking at just south of $10 million. Now, when you look at 40 million people in the state of California, I think we should be able to raise this money if people are tired of being slaves. I personally will throw money into this. I'm tired of being a slave. I think putting money to this case would be cheaper than moving to another state and trying to find a place to live and rebuilding our lives and starting all over. And you're not doing that because you hate where you live or hate your neighbors. You're doing it because you hate the government. Well, Boone Pickens said, if you have the best house on the block and you love your house, you really do, it's a great house, and the gardener's doing a lousy job, do you burn the house down or do you fire the gardener? Well, I think it's time we fire the gardener, but it's going to cost some money because the gardener's in a union.
We have a four-family cartel in California that has been ruling, literally ruling us for decades.
That's correct.
And it's going to be
Newsom's, Brown's, and
Pelosi's.
Yeah.
They're intermarried. They're intertwined. It is truly a cartel. We are under organized crime.
I had a I have a family member
that made a ton of money over being your boss, too.
And you ask, where does the money go? Well, let's just look at the high-speed rail. The funds were just drained by Feinstein Pelosi.
I have a family member that worked at the Capitol, and she was a staffer. And what she did, she told me back in 2023 that they were going to amend the Constitution. All the staffers were doing was amending. And I believe, Mark, that now the California Constitution has been amended 900 times, and there is a new Constitution edition that was made in November of 2023 that's out now. And I know that they changed some things on charter counties, charter cities, according to what I heard from one of our city council members last night, but I don't know. I'm not sure if that's totally accurate, but I just want to let you know that there's a new one out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Constitution of California had been amended 500 times by 1965.
Yeah, it's crazy, brother.
It's not surprising to me that it's been amended another 100 times in the next, 75 years. So, you know, that's the fight we're in. Now we know that, okay? The fix is in. The fight is on. We can do something about this. We've written a proposal for an initiative to break California into four different states. We're not leaving the union. We don't want to leave the union. It's not secession. I mean, gosh, I wish people would educate themselves. But what we're doing is adding we're going to subtract California from the 50 states in the United States and add four new states, or up to four. California may survive. If people vote in the areas that they want California and they keep it, then fine. I'm okay with that. But the areas that do not wish to be tyrannized any further will be free to form their own states with constitutions that will preserve their life, liberty, and property, and give them the ability to worship God the way they see fit, and to have a Bill of Rights, and that bill will be codified, and it will be very strongly worded so that the state government will not be free to interfere with those liberties ever again. And that's what we're proposing.
You know, and I think that, I think that everything you're saying really is great. I'm looking forward to getting together and chit-chatting about some of the changes that may be made, because after all, what this is basically, a statement of purpose that we have out right now of what it is we hope to accomplish, and throwing out different areas of how this could be accomplished. Now, you were saying it would probably cost about $10 million. And, whatever it costs, what's the cost of liberty? I mean, that's the thing. It depends on, yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And,
what are
and
we all paying now?
Right.
And there's the trade-off for you.
There's the trade-off. Okay. And the other, exactly. And the other thing is that, I think that, what are you willing to do? I mean, how far are we willing to go with this state that we have currently that's totally taken over our lives? They control every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other issue is this. If our opposition went to CalPERS or SEIU or CalSTRS or any of the other unions that own us, and said, hey, the country bumpkins are going to put a statewide initiative on, and we need 5 or 10 million to oppose them, they would write them a check in the morning just like that. That's what we face. We have to be able to raise this money, or we won't be able to combat the money that they could raise before breakfast.
And so you're still of the mind that what we really have to do is create a constitutional amendment for the state of California, correct?
Well, I think that one of the fatal flaws in Draper's effort was that he did not include a constitutional amendment mm-hmm. that would compel the legislature and the governor to act upon the initiative passed by the people. So in other words, and I don't think Draper was wrong. I think the court was wrong. But the way Draper did it was he proposed the initiative. He got the signatures. It was going to go on the ballot. It probably would have passed. I was going to vote for it. I mean, I was all in favor of it. And I think anybody with any brains should have been. But the point is that, he did not feel that he needed to amend the California Constitution, because upon signature, upon passage of the initiative, the California Constitution would be null and void and it wouldn't matter anymore. And I think that there is that momentary time period where between the passage of the initiative and the creation and formation of the Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution, and I'm paraphrasing, which says, no state will be formed from the territory of an existing state or two adjoining states unless the state legislatures involved agree and Congress agrees. So, in other words, we need permission from the state legislature, California state legislature, to form states from the territory of an existing state. We need the permission of Congress and to form these new states. Those are the constitutional requirements to form a state from the territory of an existing state.
Mark,
so we must have those things. In other words, there's a temporary pause while we gain that permission, and that's what would require the amendment to the California Constitution, because we'd have to compel a criminal legislature to sign the act where they wouldn't have signed it voluntarily.
Mark, how does a state split solve the problem of Reynolds versus Sims and the so-called one man, one vote?
It doesn't solve the problem in and of itself. However, if our Constitution is accepted by Congress, and that's part of the Article 4, Section 4 process, where each state is guaranteed a Republican form of government, well, the remedy to that is legislative. So it's not a judicial remedy. That's a legislative remedy. So what you do is you submit your proposed constitution to the Congress of the United States, and if they approve that constitution and create your enabling act, in other words, the legislation that creates your state, then they have approved your method of government. Now, someone will sue us on that. You bet your bottom dollar on it. But Justice Clarence Thomas has already said he would love to see a case like that challenging the one man, one vote principle. And according to Thomas's words, this principle has been supported by the courts for 50 years, and yet it exists nowhere in the Constitution. So the Supreme Court has already expressed interest in hearing a case like that, and we can certainly make a case where our counties are legal subdivisions of the state, and therefore they deserve individual representation regardless of their population in order to balance the house of government so that all parts of the state remain represented.
So we're not afraid of being taken to court. We want that to happen. That is the solution.
I would love to have that happen, because we could change the dynamic and put the train back on the track. In other words, with our actions, we could change this nation for the better.
I would like you to explain what, when people say that the counties are an arm of the state and the counties are a legal subsidy of the state. We've only got about 3 minutes, go ahead.
Well, Justice Warren said that counties don't deserve individual representation because they're simply political arms of the state.
Right.
They're not legal subdivisions. And when brand new supervisors go to Sacramento to go to supervisor school, that's one point they pound into them. You are simply an arm of the state. You do not represent the county. You represent the state in your county.
However.
And that is against the California Constitution.
Go ahead.
And is not true. So that's just plain not true. We do deserve representation. We are legal subdivisions. We do have different wants and different needs.
I think that's marvelous. I think you just explained something. I hope Laura Hobbs was listening. And I hope the supervisors for Shasta County were just listening to what Mark just said. There it is in a nutshell. So that changes the whole new, that's a whole new ball game for jurisdiction, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And so, that's amazing.
Is,
go ahead.
Jurisdiction is only useful if you use it. I mean,
wow.
And we depend on the interposition of our magistrates to stand between us and the state to prevent tyranny of the majority, and that's exactly what we're fighting right now, tyranny of the majority. And the illustration of that is a bill designed to build water storage caused the loss of all water storage in our county. We no longer have big water storage in Siskiyou County because of a bill designed to create water storage by Lower California.
Yeah, we have 1 minute left, and then it goes, then we have to say bye-bye. So anyway, close us out, my friend.
Well, Thomas Gordon said in 1721, in most of the world there is neither light nor liberty, and certainly where there is, there was always a plot against it. That's what's happening here in California. We can stop this, but only we can do it. And we're going to have to put our money where our mouth is. The time has come for 51.
Amen. 52 and 53, apparently.
And 54, because we want more.
No, 54, because 50 is gone. Well, we started 50 again.
That's true.
It's kind of like a soiree. Got you. Is this how you feel when you're right? Mark, thank you so much, my friend. Thanks for everything you do. Thank you for the great information. Folks, share this program. Share it. You've got incredible information you can't get anywhere else. Jefferson State of Mind. So with that, time has come.
For 51.
Or 52 and 53.
There we go.
Because we want to be free.
Okay, everybody heard it here first. I actually won an argument with Janet.
And 54.
No, you didn't win. I just ceded.
Have a great Sunday, everyone.
You know, justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys. You gotta draw a hard line.
settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.